No Donna Murphy tonight. She is on vacation, but Jessica Blaylock, Lauren Brooks, and Blythe Brumleave coming at you with another edition of Helmets and Heels. We're kind of technically taking it to the road tonight because we typically do the show from down at the stadium, but we're at the home base of 9090 Hogan Road, so this is a little bit of a new environment. What do you think so far, Blythe?
I'm digging it. This place is a lot bigger than I thought it was. When you first walk in, it looks like a little
like a labyrinth.
just more spaces every time you open up a new dorm. Like, I didn't know that existed.
I've worked here for 4.5, 5 years and just realized that we had a kitchen.
Really?
No, this is not true.
Okay, I was going to say, someone was hiding it from me. We will miss Jeff Logman coming in and stealing Skittles from the studio tonight since we're here at 9090 Hogan Road instead of 1 Everbank Place. I think that's the address.
I think that is, too. All right, well, let's just jump right in. We're going to get to the quarterback debate. Obviously, you just heard which way Blythe and Lauren are leaning as far as who should start the home opener this Sunday against the Colts. I will be the tiebreaker. You're not going to get that opinion, though, until 8 o'clock. You're also going to meet Marissa, hear her wonderful story. But first, something not so wonderful. That game Sunday against the Redskins. Lauren, what a disaster that was for Jacksonville on both sides of the ball.
Absolutely. I actually watched it with some friends who told me yesterday that if it wasn't for me being there, that they would not have watched the second half. They absolutely would have turned it off, and they were kind of mad that I was there watching it because otherwise they could have avoided that disaster. It was an epic fail across the board. The quarterback position obviously has been one of debate, and we'll get into that. But when a team has a franchise record 10 sacks against them, you know that the day didn't go well. You can't win just that set alone, even if I didn't tell you that there was 10 or more explosive plays given up by the defense. Just the fact that the quarterback got his face smashed 10 times means you're not going to win. It was awful, and there were so many things to be proud about in week one that this time you just wanted to cry. Like, I feel so bad for the players, for the coaches, who felt like all the talk around town, the arrow's been pointing up, and now they have nothing to say other than we have to fix this. I don't know that we have any excuses. We just have to get better. But for a fan base, I don't know if that's enough, and it leads us to, for instance, yesterday on Jaguars Today, a lot of very angry people calling.
And that's kind of where I come from. I've been a fan for years. I've been a season ticket holder for years, and I am just fed up. It feels like I'm a masochist where I just keep doing this to myself every single season, where I build up the hope and I defend them to everyone that I know, and then we show up and we give a performance on the field that it makes me want to throw up. And as a fan, it was so depressing to wake up on Monday morning and not be excited to go and watch SportsCenter and not be excited to go and see highlights if they were to actually show highlights on SportsCenter. It was a tough thing to do, and it's really bad that it happened right before our first home game.
I think the most frustrating part about it is because you did feel like this roster was better heading into the season. So the Jaguars, while they still may not have won a lot of games, you thought they were going to be competitive. Well, after that first half in Philly, they weren't competitive. Obviously, they weren't competitive the entire game. I mean, you look on offense, Chad Henne gets sacked 10 times. Receivers not running the right routes. Receivers not being able to read the coverages against them. Chad Henne holding on to the ball too long. The offense can't run block. They can't pass protect. Toby Gerhardt gets tackled behind the line of scrimmage. He doesn't even have a chance to really make a ton of yards. 8 first downs for Jacksonville. 148 total yards, only 48 plays compared to 81 for Washington, 449 yards. Kirk Cousins comes in after RG3 gets hurt, throws for 250 yards, 2 touchdowns. DeSean Jackson goes out. The offense still moves the ball so easily against this defense. I mean, it was just a bad, bad day on both sides of the ball. But I will say, and if there's a silver lining at all to this situation, and people right now are probably saying, Jessica, you're crazy. There's no silver lining to Sunday. What are you about to say? Well, I will say this. The NFL, we know, is a week-to-week league. Lauren, did any of us pick Cleveland to beat the Saints? Absolutely not. Did anybody have the Colts being 0-2, the Saints being 0-2 to start the season? Absolutely not. The NFL is a week-by-week league where at any given time, any team can beat any team. You see it happen all the time. So while I understand and I'm not being naive to the fact that there are a lot of problems that need to be fixed, there are a lot of holes on offense that I don't think we necessarily thought were there heading into this season, there is still a chance to make progress, win a couple games, be competitive, fix some of those issues.
Better not be a couple.
Start of the season 0-8 last year. I'm tired of losing. I'm tired.
If all we're getting is a couple wins out of this season, this is going to be a long season.
Well, by a couple, I mean, you know, 4 or 5, at least where you were last year, or maybe one more. I had the Jaguars before the start of the season winning 6 games. Hopefully that's still realistic. We still haven't seen what Toby Gerhardt is capable of because he's been playing with a bum ankle for now 2 weeks. Is Luke Joeckel hitting what you might call a quote-unquote rookie wall, even though he's in his second year, because he missed most of his rookie season? Obviously, the Jaguars, I thought, made a strong statement today by releasing Cam Bradfield after poor play on Sunday. Sam Young is now going to be another starter on the offensive line. Defensively, did it hurt that badly, Blythe, to not have Jonathan Cyprian on the field? I mean, there's still some things that can be corrected, hopefully, pretty soon.
And that's the thing, is that you would hope that the defense does not center around one guy like Cyprian, with him being out. But then you think about the shifts that have to be made, and there's certain guys that are used to playing in a certain position, and they played that way all throughout camp, and then all of a sudden you're asking them to play a different system, and it is a very young team, and I'm trying to be patient with them. But I really would hope that one guy going down wouldn't affect the defense as badly as it did. But it did. And these guys got to find a leader on the field. Someone has got to make, on both sides of the ball, someone's got to stand up.
Well, and typically our leader on the defense is Paul Posluszny. And up front last week, 2 weeks ago against Philadelphia, Chris Clemens played so well. And he was basically invisible in this game. So I'll play a little of devil's advocate for you, Jessica, with the fan base. The NFL is a week-to-week league, so there's supposed to be teams that show up every week. Anyone can win. That Jaguars team that showed up on Sunday outside the nation's capital did not have a chance of winning, and the starting quarterback and best wide receiver on the team were out after the first quarter.
Should win that game
every time. So that game should be right. And granted, Kirk Cousins is a much different quarterback. They game-planned all week for a mobile quarterback, and Kirk Cousins is a stand-in-the-pocket, drop-back thrower. I get that. It threw them off, certainly. But then their best wide receiver goes down, and they barely even use Pierre Garçon either. They kept finding Niles Paul. Like, who would plan on Niles Paul getting multiple touchdowns in the fullback?
She's getting angry, folks.
I'm getting upset all over again.
She's getting angry.
They were wide freaking open, and I know that they're young, and I want to say they can win this week against the Colts, and I believe that they can. However, when it comes to the fan base's perspective, you've got to score more than 7 points in a 60-minute football game. And 3 points is basically a throwaway. You've got to be able to do better than that.
I understand fans' frustration. I understand our frustration. Look, we're all fans of this team. I was born and raised in Jacksonville. I have cheered for no other NFL team in my life besides the Jaguars. I understand the frustration. But I will say, if you choose to trust Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell, then you have to trust that there's still going to be growing pains even in their second season. There's still a massive roster turnover. They're still in the process of essentially stripping this team down and rebuilding it from the start. You have to trust that the decisions that they're making, be it that they start Chad Henne again this Sunday for the home opener, be it that there's going to be some more personnel moves, you've just got to trust that they know better than we do. They can't make decisions based on what the fans want. They just can't. And yeah, they're probably going to take some heat for that. There's a lot of people saying, start the kid. there's a lot of people saying, why isn't Blake Bortles in there? Why didn't he get a chance to play? Why are you still passing the ball when you should just run the clock out and run the ball? That's why Allen Hurns got hurt. Well, I mean, there's a ton of questions, and I understand that. I understand the fan base frustration. I understand all the questions that are being asked, and they're legitimate ones. But in the end, you can't expect Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell to make decisions for this team based on what the fans want. You have to trust that they are sticking with the process that they decided on when they first became the general manager and head coach of this team. And I think that's still going to result in some tough weeks for this team and some serious growing pains.
I trust them. I'm just frustrated. Just like I'm sure they were frustrated. You know what I thought about? We had Michaela Bradley on our very first show for Helmets and Heels. And we talked to her about how much football they talk at home. And she kind of said that, you know, once Gus gets there, they more talk about their personal lives. I thought about her Sunday night once he got home, if he even went home, if he didn't go straight to the stadium just to rewatch the film. And I wondered how that conversation went. Hey, honey, how was your day? Well, actually, it sucked.
It was
we were
the
exposed
worst
on national television, and there was nothing good to say about it. I mean, trust me, when I'm watching the games, when Mercedes Lewis scored that 63-yard touchdown, I was jumping up and down in my friend's living room thinking, we have a chance still. You know what? Any play can turn it around. And I think it was that also that led so much frustration because then there was almost nothing else. Besides a field goal, there was nothing else positive on offense. And that's where you just want to be able to cheer about something.
Well, the bottom line is Sunday wasn't good enough. It was nowhere near good enough. Nobody's going to sugarcoat it. There were no positives to take away from Sunday. The players know that. Gus Bradley knows that. I'm sure Dave Caldwell knows that. And now they've got 14 more chances to make it right. And just like Sendarek Marks said, when we talked to him yesterday in the locker room, how quickly do you need to turn this thing around? Just started laughing and said, in about a week, we got to turn it around in a week.
Please.
We can't keep playing like this. So more Jaguars talk to come. We're going to get into our own quarterback debate. Should Bortles or Henny be your starter for the game for this Sunday's game, the home opener against the Colts, especially with that being a division rival, a division game. Also, we'll recap our NFL picks against the spread last week. Pride always comes before the fall. That's all I'll say about the NFL picks. You're also going to get some great tailgating tips tonight. And also, for you female sports fans out there, we found an interesting article on five obnoxious things that female sports fans have to deal with. We're going to get into that. We're going to have some fun with that. But coming up next, we're going to meet Marissa. We're going to hear her story. We're going to talk about the J Fund, and we're going to let you know how you can get involved and what you can do to help beat cancer. That's all coming up next on Helmets and Heels. This is 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
You're listening to Helmets and Heels on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to Helmets and Heels. I may have just made an executive decision as far as the music.
That's true, you did.
Because Led Zeppelin is now playing Coming Back instead of Independent Women by Destiny's Child.
You know how much you love that song.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to make a power move, and that was mine. All right, welcome back to Helmets and Heels. I am Jessica Blaylock. Lauren Brooks and Blythe Brumleave alongside me. Donna Murphy is on vacation, but she will join us next week, which, by the way,
next
we
week
will be live at Black Sheep in Riverside.
Yes, historic 5 points in Riverside, Black Sheep. We hope that everyone listening is going to come, including you, Marissa. We want you to come on out.
And Jaguars running back Toby Gerhart will be out of Black Sheep with us. So we're going to have a lot of fun.
If you need a B-star, we're the A-stars, and then he's obviously the B-star.
Everyone's obviously going to come out to see us. And it's cool, too, that Toby's going to be there, but obviously.
Thank you, Toby.
Thank you, Toby. All right, and we do want to give a huge shout-out and thank you to Underwood Jewelers, who is a wonderful sponsor of our show. I decided the other day that, God willing, I get an engagement ring one day. I want it to be from Underwoods. That is the greatest endorsement that I can give them.
Yeah, I don't think that's God willing.
I don't even know what that means. Let's welcome in our special guest. Let's get to her story because it's much cooler than mine. Marissa Ierna, most of our listeners know how involved 1010XL is with the J Fund. And, you know, it's ever since Tom Coughlin was head coach of the Jaguars back in the day. He established the J Fund as a great cause to help raise money for families whose children are battling cancer. And you had a really special interaction with the J Fund and their support that they gave to you and your family. But Marissa, just real quick, so people know, give us kind of the background of your story and, you know, when you found out you had cancer and how old you were and just kind of what was going through your mind at the time.
Yeah, so I was 17 years old when I was diagnosed. It was May 24th, 2012, 2 weeks before high school graduation. So, of course, you know, getting ready for college and finally moving out of your parents' house and going to have fun with all your friends. And I was kind of given that setback. And so I was diagnosed with stage 4 alveolar rhabdomyosarcoma, which is a soft tissue cancer. And I started 54 weeks of chemotherapy on June 19, 2012. I went through six weeks of photon therapy, which is a type of radiation. And then on June 17, 2013, I finished my last chemotherapy treatment and was declared cancer-free on July 10, 2013. And so I have gone through my year scans, and so I'm, you know, a year cancer-free, which is a pretty big milestone with the whole treatment thing. So now I'm just kind of going through my new treatment of getting the scans and starting back at college at UNF and going back to the normal life.
I love that, by the way. My favorite part is you saying a year later, I'm still cancer-free. Everything's clear so far. We love that.
Absolutely. Everyone knows that people who've been through cancer dread those first scans because everything's riding on that. And you've worked so hard and you've been through so much. And then all of a sudden for you, obviously, turned out exactly the way we all wanted it to. One of the coolest things that you told me, Marissa, is about your running. And you completed 3 half marathons before your diagnosis. And then you met with a doctor who said that you were going to have surgery and you would never be able to run again. And can you kind of pick up the story from there?
Yeah, so actually on the day of graduation, I went to a doctor who told me that we needed to take the tumor out because it was wrapped around my soleus muscle. And by taking that muscle out, I was never going to have the motion of running or possibly even driving. And so I kind of took a step back and we kind of looked at reality and met with another doctor and got his opinion. And so we did not go through with surgery. And so to this day, I am running and doing, you know, everything I can when it comes to my athletics. And so I did run 3 half marathons before I was diagnosed with cancer. And my last one was the Tour de Pain half marathon here in Jacks. And I ran it 2 hours and 11 minutes. And then my first one back after cancer was the exact same half marathon 2 years later. And I ran it in 1 hour and 53 minutes, beating my time by 18 minutes. So it was a pretty big milestone, especially when, you know, I was one day not going to be able to run again. And then I decided against it. And it's the best decision I probably ever made. So, yeah, it was a pretty big accomplishment.
Next time you run one, I'll stand out there with a sign, but I will not be running alongside of you. Just so you know.
Well, tell us a little bit about the J Fund and how you guys came across the J Fund and how they were able to support your family while you were battling cancer.
Yeah, so when, you know, when you're first diagnosed with cancer, obviously the biggest thing becomes the medical bills. And a lot of people don't realize that, you know, when you're in and out of the hospital every week, one of your parents usually has to quit their job and because they can't do it. And luckily for me, my parents did not have to do that because of their work, and they were able to work with them about, you know, working in the hospital and being mobile and everything. So that worked out good for us. But, you know, so with the average cost for treatment, it's about $500,000. And so, you know, to think, okay, so you're going to get hit with all the medical bills and you're like, oh my God, how are you going to pay this? Well, then you go home and you're like, you know, shoot, you still have to pay for groceries and you still have to pay for gas to get to the doctors. And so for us, our social worker at Nemours set us up with the J Fund. And what they really do is they really strive to be there for the patients while, you know, giving them the parties and giving them the different days that we get to go, then, you know, the social events and everything and the teen room at the hospital. And then they're also there for the parents, and, you know, they help with the grocery bills and those little bills that nobody thinks is that important until you realize that, oh my God, like, I don't have enough money to feed the four of us for this weekend. And so, you know, they helped my parents a lot with the mortgage bill and, you know, paying for the gas. And my dad did the calculations for us. And we just going up to Nemours, I think was like once a week, was about $2,500 in gas. And so you can imagine that, you know, the families that come from, because we treat kids from all over the northeast area, I think it is, and, you know, some from Georgia. So people are coming from all over here. And so for them, I can only imagine how much gas is. And so, you know, the J Fund, it's just they really strive to be there for the patients and the, you know, the parents especially. And that's it's a pretty big thing, just because, you know, the patient itself gets a lot of help, but you don't realize that they really help the parents as well. So.
And Jags fans, you can help for this cause right now. Go to bit.ly/JagsTickets, and you can get discounted tickets, and $30 of the proceeds go to the J Fund. So people can just automatically, for going to the game, sign right online, get the tickets, bit.ly/JagsTickets. $30 goes to the J Fund to help all these families out. Now, Marissa, another thing that you told me was one of the hardest parts for you was the thought of missing your high school boyfriend's football game, but you somehow rallied every week despite your 102 fever to be able to make it. How proud are you of that?
I was pretty proud of that. It's pretty hard when you're neutropenic to get your counts back up, but I got pretty lucky. I wouldn't say lucky, but in my eyes, it was luck. I would get treatment that Monday. Sometimes it was a Monday through Friday treatment in the hospital, or it'd be Monday through Tuesday. And that Monday night, it was 101 fever, 102 fever in the hospital. And usually it takes, like, my first one, they're like, oh, it's going to take you, you know, 4 to 7 days, depending on your body, to get up. And Thursday night, I was out of the hospital, and Friday night, I was at the football games. And so I never missed it, except there was one time where I didn't miss it, but there was – I was in the hospital, and my body was just like, all right, you're done. Like, this is too much. And so it took a long time for my counts to get up. And then my lovely staff at Wolfson and Nemours, just because, you know, the doctors and nurses, they're the best people in the world, and they become your second family. And Dr. Joyce, I was at an ANC of zero that morning, and by 4:30, I'm like, I'm crying, and he's just like, all right, just go. Get out of here. Go to the football game. And so he let me go, and I got to enjoy it. And, of course, the next day I went back to get my counts, and I was completely fine. So thank you, Dr. Joyce. You know, don't worry. I didn't get sick. But it was definitely a proud moment being able to, you know, especially that night, I got to surprise him because he had no idea I was coming. So it was pretty, yeah, it was cool.
What position did he play in high school?
He was an O-line.
Okay.
Yeah, he was, I don't know, he was O-line, not center. Just
Can O-line. He try out for the Jags?
Try out this week. No, I don't know. He's probably listening right now, so I'm not going to say anything. But I think if he wanted to, he probably, you know. But
we are joined right now by Marissa Ierna. She is a cancer survivor. She's also talking about her experiences with the J Fund. And if you'd like to learn more about the J Fund, you can do so online. Visit tcjfund.org. You can read just about the organization. You can also go there to donate. Lauren, just tell us again, there's a cool ticket offer for the Jags that can benefit the J Fund.
Sure, absolutely. And I'll go ahead and tweet that out via Helmets and Heels. And then also, if you follow us, we'll all retweet it. So that way you'll have it. But it's bit.ly/JagsTickets. And that way, $30 of those proceeds can go directly to the J Fund.
Now, Marissa, one thing that you hear people talk so much about is how, you know, your mindset when battling with an illness or a disease, just being positive about it. And you hear about, like, walking into children's wards at hospitals, and they try and create an environment of happiness and positivity. What was your mindset walking through your cancer treatments? I mean, after you first find out that you have cancer and how devastating that must have been, but you seem like such a positive person. I mean, what kind of approach did you have to make it through all of this?
When I was first diagnosed, I mean, obviously, especially for my parents, I mean, getting the news that, you know, you have cancer is devastating. But
right.
For me, it was kind of like, all right, you know, Dr. Sandler, okay, I have cancer. Okay, cool. I get it. When am I going to lose my hair? And so that was the most devastating part. And I think it is for any child, and especially, you know, at my age, it was one of those things where I can understand it, and most of the kids understand it, but when you get to the age where, you know, they're 5 and 6, and they don't really get it. They just know that they're different because they don't have to go to school and that they don't have hair and everything. But a lot of the patients that I talk to, a new diagnosis is the hair. And so for me, you know, once I lost my hair, it was kind of like, it's real. And, you know, it's one of those things where you look in the mirror and it's like, you're different. And when you walk out, you know, lots of places, people stare at you. And it's not because, you know, you've got a nice shirt on. It's because you stand out in the crowd. And so for the first, you know, couple months of treatment, it was very depressing. But you just kind of have to realize that, you know, it's a very bad thing unless you're happy. And the one thing I realize is that, you know, obviously the drugs and the radiation, they kill the tumor, and you know, the doctors will agree to that, but they'll also agree that if you don't have a positive attitude, you're not going to get through it. And it's just, it's one of those things where, you know, cancer really has been a blessing in disguise for me. And I think that's how I looked at it, is, you know, you'll ask my aunt and my parents and they say, oh, Marissa, that's not true. You know, you, maybe not my parents, but, you know, they'll say you had such bad days. And I'm just like, okay, yeah, I had bad days, but I don't, those bad days do not equal up to the good days that I had. And, you know, all the experiences that I got to go through. And it's just one of those things where I had a lot more bad days than good days. I will definitely say that. You know, there were a lot of depressing days, but I try not to look at that, because there's just no point. You know, if I live every day with a dark cloud over my head, then what am I fighting for? And so that's how I had to look at it. And I realized that by showing, you know, it's not the bald head, it's not, you know, the paleness that the chemo brings you. It's the fact that you have a smile when you're going through something so hard, and people look at you differently because of that now. And it's not just the bald head. And, you know, that's how I looked at it, is that you're touching other people's hearts and you're inspiring them. And that's what I tell kids, is that you need to use it. You need to use the smile, make the smile your hair, and, you know, make it your new game face, I guess you could say.
Cancer survivor Marissa Iorno with us. We're going to spend a little bit more time with her because you have a really cool story now of how you give back, having walked through cancer yourself, and we want to hear all about that. Also want to get your feedback on the Bengals and what they're doing for Devin Still as his 4-year-old daughter battles pediatric cancer. Then in the 8 o'clock hour, it is back to the Jags. We are going to give you some great tailgating tips to get ready for this the season opener at home. We're also going to debate the quarterback issue. Who should start against Indy, Bortles or Henny? That is all coming up. You are listening to Helmets and Heels on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
5 FM.
Helmets and Heels on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
It is a special edition of Helmets and Heels because we are going for 2 hours tonight. We are lucky enough to be joined in studio right now by Marissa Iorno, cancer survivor. I just like introducing you that way because I think it's so amazing.
She kicked cancer's butt.
Absolutely, she did. And we're so grateful to be a radio station that gets to be involved with the J Fund and just all of
the
wonderful things that they do for families. Unbelievable stat that we just heard. Within every zip code in Jacksonville, there are at least 8 families who are dealing with pediatric cancer in some way, shape, or form, which is astonishing to me and just mind-boggling. And, I mean, it's everywhere you look. We've all either been affected personally, or someone we know has been affected personally by cancer, and it's tough. But Marissa, you're finding an opportunity and a way to give back to families after what you've just walked through. Give us a little bit of background now on what you do to help families whose children are currently battling cancer.
Yeah, well, to begin with, at Nemours, we have an adolescent program where it's the, you know, the older teens, patients who are surviving, they now go to meet younger patients who are 13 and older, and they go and talk to them when they need help, and, you know, they're having trouble losing their hair. And so that's one thing that I do. And then talking about, you know, the 8 families in every zip code in Jacksonville, it seems like every day I'm hearing somebody of my family's friend's daughter or son, and, you know, knows somebody. And so not only do I meet a lot of patients who are teenagers, I've also met with a lot of younger patients lately, just because of family, friends, and everything. And so I do a lot of that. I do a lot of, you know, just going to visit the patients. I always bring them goodie bags when I first meet them. It's just my, you know, my fun thing to do. You know, I go and talk to them and, you know, just kind of tell them what's going on. And, you know, the girl that I just met, Kate, she's got the exact same cancer I do. And so not only did it help her, you know, meeting me, but after I left, her mom just said, you know, you may have not have, like, she was, you know, very shy, young little girl, but she's, you know, you may have not impacted her, but let me tell you that you impacted me. And so it's one of those things where, you know, not only am I impacting the young patients, it's the fact that I'm also helping the parents look at, you know, looking at me and say, okay, it's going to be okay. And then on the side note of that, I'm also going with the Tom Coughlin J Fund right now. We're doing our Go Gold initiative for the NFL. Back in December of 2013, I kind of met with Kelly and Helena and stuff, and we kind of talked about, you know, going big or go home. And so for me, the NFL is like the biggest thing in America. I mean, everybody watches it, and they influence every single person in America. And so I just kind of figured, you know, they do pink during October for breast cancer. Why not go gold in September for childhood cancer? And so we've kind of started. I've worked with the J Fund a lot with this, and of course they've done a lot of work in helping me do this. And I just got back from New York last night at midnight from the Go Gold game and for the Giants, and that was really, really cool. You know, getting the awareness out and the fact, you know, people don't get it. They don't think that children get cancer. And I know I didn't know that children got cancer until I was one of them. And so it's been a real pleasure to kind of give back, and I guess it's giving back. It's more of just, you know, it's more of being the voice for the kids that can't have that voice. And so that right now, I would say the biggest project is just Go Gold.
Go gold or go home.
Yeah.
So this Sunday, there will be a special before the game presentation for, is it cancer survivors or people currently going through cancer?
It is both, actually. Excellent. So the Giants are putting on a tailgate, or not the Giants, sorry, the Tom Coughlin. I'm still on a whirlwind from my New York
midnight
trip.
Late.
Yeah. The Tom Coughlin J Fund is putting on a tailgate party for 35 families, so 35 patients and all their families. We're going to WJCT, and we're going to, you know, have what is that game called?
Cornhole.
Cornhole, there it is. Cornhole, you know, hot dogs, all that great stuff for the kids. And then we will be walking over to the game. I think about 12:15, they're going to do a patient recognition on the field, and they're going to host all of the patients and their families on the field to, you know, start the Go Gold thing. And so we're all going to be wearing the new Tom Coughlin J Fund Limited Edition shirts, which you can get online right now at their website. And $10 goes to the J Fund when you purchase their shirts. They're really, really cool. They have a big gold ribbon on the front and on the back. It says hashtag Go Gold. No one fights alone. So those are pretty cool shirts. So you won't be able to miss us if you're out there. So it's going to be a really fun day. I'm hoping, you know, we're going to get the word out in Jacksonville, just because, you know, we treat a lot of kids here. It's 90 kids are diagnosed annually in Jacksonville. So it's going to be a really fun day, and we hope to see you guys out there.
Definitely. Marissa, you mentioned earlier about the importance of family and the doctors that helped you through your situation. How important is your role in the J Fund, and how the doctors still currently there are helping with the children currently diagnosed with cancer?
So you mean my role, like with?
With your role within the J Fund and then the J Fund itself, how do they help families through this?
I would say, so my role is more of just, I think my title is the patient ambassador, and I'm kind of more of just, you know, the one that they can lean on when it comes to the patients who need help and need assistance and, you know, trying to fight this thing. And that, you know, the J Fund really, when it comes to helping out with Nemours and Wolfson's, is they really just make it, they give the families comfort knowing that, you know, somebody is there financially for them. You know, a lot of foundations around us are, the money's going to research and, you know, different things like that. And so for this foundation, when you donate to them, the money directly goes to families in need for financial assistance. And so it's like I said, you know, people don't realize it's expensive when you start talking about not only the medications, you know, the drugs, the PET scans, the CAT scans, it gets very, very costly. And so for, you know, the J Fund to be able to be there for families who, need help with those little things, you know, just paying the gas or getting groceries and paying mortgage bills and things like that. It's a really, really, really big impact for those families.
And it must be pretty beneficial to see the, I guess, the reactions firsthand rather than if you were just to donate online and you never really see where that money goes or what happens to it. So I would imagine it's more rewarding to see a smile on a face rather than
yes,
a tax write-off.
Well, I want to get to a story that's going on in the NFL that's actually a positive one. I mean, obviously these past few weeks, few months haven't been great as far as the lead stories around the National Football League, but the story out of Cincinnati, what the Bengals have done for defensive end Devin Still, first off, you know, keeping him on the practice squad so that he could keep up his insurance. For those who don't know, if you haven't read the story of Devin Still yet, his four-year-old daughter is being treated for pediatric cancer in Philadelphia. He found out a couple months ago. He knew his head was not in the game, wanted to spend as much time with his daughter as possible because she has a 50-50 chance of survival, and he thought, you know, this may be all the time I have left with her, and wants to be there, obviously, for every minute. The Bengals kept him on the practice squad and then elevated him to the active roster for this past week's game. He's been able to keep his insurance. He's been able to keep a solid paycheck, obviously, because, Marissa, you mentioned how expensive it is. I mean, he had projections of bills getting up to almost $1 million for his daughter's cancer treatment. And the Bengals are still selling jerseys of his for $100, 50 of which will go to Cincinnati Children's Hospital and Pediatric Cancer Care and Research. They're just doing so many things to support Devin and his daughter, Leah. For someone who's personally walked through battling cancer herself, you've got to look at a story like that, and I'm sure absolutely light up to see what this team is doing to just give back to one of their players and a four-year-old who is raging right now the battle of her life.
Yeah, actually, I won't forget the night that I saw that video. It was Thursday night. It was after I had spoke at another event for the Tom Coughlin J Fund, and I went home, and I was just talking to one of the employees with the J Fund about how, you know, how do we get the go gold with the other teams, because we have connections with the Giants, and we have connections with the Jags because they're here in town. You know, so how do we step into that? And I went on my email, and all of a sudden I saw this video, and I watched it, and I called my dad. I'm like, Dad, come look at this. Oh, my God. I mean, I had tears in my eyes. It was so impacting, you know, just to know that people care. I mean, you just realize who says it best is in Martina McBride's I'm Gonna Love You Through It music video is I don't know what the girl's name is, but she says, you don't realize how much people love you until you get sick. And it's totally true. And, you know, for the fact that obviously he's missing the practices, you know, not because he wants to miss practices. It's because he doesn't want to miss any time with his daughter. And for them to sit here and, you know, say, you can come to the practice squad so we can help you, it's so rewarding. And it just brings hope to, you know, that people really do care and that he's now going to get through it and he'll be able to have that, you know, light and that smile and help his daughter, and he'll be able to have the money to afford it. But most importantly, he's going to have the support, which, you know, not everybody gets, but he's going to have that support to get through it, which will bring them that positive attitude.
Which is really just unbelievable, because it's such a great reminder that when you're reading all these negative headlines, there are still so many positive things that are going on in the NFL. There's still so many good people. I mean, you look at all the things that the Jaguars do and giving back to the community, whether it's Cecil Shorts and the backpacks that they provide for children through the United Way, whether it's Paul Posluszny and the Wounded Warriors, whether it's, you know, the J Fund events that take place locally and guys like Josh Scobie being involved. I mean, there's so many great things. And I'm sure you've had some great interactions with Jaguar players who still do stay very involved with the J Fund.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I remember my first one of my first hospital stays, although Justin Blackman is not on the team anymore, so obviously it's...
Just to spend it indefinitely.
Yeah,
okay.
But I'll never forget this. It was, it was one of those things where him and two other players had come into the hospital room, and I was like, I tweeted you before because I heard you were coming in, and so sure enough, he retweeted my tweet after they left, and it was just one of those, like, moments that you'll never forget because you're like, oh, yeah, like, I got a retweet from, a football player who now obviously is not on the team, but that's okay.
It's okay. We can say something positive about Justin Blackman. Yay! That's a win.
But yeah, it's very rewarding, when they come in and they get to do, they get to do the interactions with the kids. It's one of they light up. Like I said before, go big or go home. It's because especially people like the NFL, these kids look up to these players, and so when they come in, it's a whole nother, it's like hope for them. It's a very, very cool experience. I got to coat, I guess that would make sense. I'm a Dream Coat member at Wolfson, and so I got to coat Maurice Jones-Drew when he donated his $50,000 to Wolfson. And so it was just one of, there was a bunch of cancer patients there all being involved in it. And it was so rewarding to see that, this money's going to go to our hospital to help us get better. And so they definitely do a lot more than what people think. And so,
yeah, it's incredible. And whether it was Maurice Jones-Drew, whether it was Josh Scobie, whether it was Brad Meester, who was, really involved and probably still is, and even a guy like Will Blackman, who spent some time in New York with Coach Coughlin. Mm-hmm. And these players are so involved. And again, in a week, in a month where you haven't always heard the most positive things coming out of the NFL, we want to applaud the guys who do it right. And Coach Coughlin and the Giants and the Bengals and the Jaguars and everyone who gives back to the community in so many ways, so often in ways that we don't always necessarily see. We just want to tip our hat. We want to say congratulations to you, Marissa, and all the wonderful things that you're doing with your life and the way that you're giving back to families who are dealing with obviously a horrifically tragic situation. We thank you so much for the time you spend with us tonight. And just real quick again, just remind people what the Jaguars are doing for this Sunday's home opener against the Colts, and we'll give them the ticket offer again.
Yeah, so this Sunday we're doing the Go Gold Initiative. The Jags and the Tom Coughlin J Fund have paired up to start raising awareness for childhood cancer. We're going to be hosting 35 families out on the field to do a patient recognition before the game, and we are going to be hosting a tailgate party, and we are going to be going gold. So hopefully you'll be out there, and if you are, hashtag go gold. That's our trend on Twitter and Instagram, and look for us out there, and make sure you buy a t-shirt.
Exactly. Buy the t-shirts now so that they can show the support in advance of Sunday, right? And that website is bit.ly/JagsTickets. $30 goes to the J Fund. And one thing that I loved about the Devin Still story and his 4-year-old daughter, Leah, is that she is called she calls herself the selfie queen, basically. Because he said that she can break people's passcodes, get in their phones, and take selfies of herself. So, Marissa, we need to know, how often are you taking selfies?
Well, I actually have been taking selfies a lot, especially this past week, and I took one with the Statue of Liberty. It was
nice.
Pretty cool. So, yeah, I take quite
That's
a bit.
Pretty good one.
Good.
As we've learned, Mercedes Lewis also likes to take selfies. Paul Pozlesny, on the other hand, said no selfies. All right, Marissa, thank you so much again.
Thank you.
And we look forward to this Sunday's events and the home opener against the Colts. When we do return, we are going to get into the first home game. We're going to give you some awesome tailgating tips for how to make the most of this Sunday's experience, especially if the product on the field may not be as much fun as a product off the field. We're hoping that that's not the case, but just in case, we'll give you some keys to some great tailgating. Also, a couple of obnoxious things that female sports fans have to put up and how we feel about those things. Also, don't forget that quarterback debate. Should Bortles or Henny start for this Sunday's home opener? I might have to be the tiebreaker after you hear what Blythe and Lauren have to say. That's all coming up on Helmets and Heels. It's 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Girls just want to talk football. More Helmets and Heels now on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
You know what else girls want to do besides talk football and have fun?
What?
Girls want to make the right picks against the spread. And this girl did not. After going 8-8 the first week, I went a miserable 3-13 this past week. Blythe, you killed it. You went 9-7?
9-7. I mean, you guys should be impressed, right?
I am very impressed.
Considering I've done the worst.
It's a fluke.
At least I'm sitting in the worst position now. I didn't do the worst last week thanks to Blaylock's horrific record.
I haven't done well yet. Bad.
But at least I said at the beginning of the season that I will never be good at picking against the spread. So at least I said that, right?
Yeah.
I'm just winging it.
Maybe I should have issued a disclaimer as well. Do not bet any money based on my picks. If I've lost anyone money, I apologize. Take every team that I pick this week and go in the opposite direction, and you will make all of your money back. All right, I guess with D. Murph gone on vacation, she'll be back next week. And a reminder that we will be at Black Sheep in Five Points, Riverside area. Toby Gerhardt going to be out with us, so be sure to come out. Starts at 7. We're going to have a ton of fun.
I hope D. Murph gets that memo, by the way.
Yeah, that we're at Black Sheep.
Yeah.
She doesn't end up at the state. Well, you know what? We'll make sure that she knows. We'll make sure that she gets there safely. I guess I will try and run our picks. All right, so I went 3-13. Blythe went 9-7. Lauren, how did you do?
I think I was 5-11.
And I think Donna also may have gone.
I think she had one less pick than me.
Okay, so one less. 8-8.
Yeah.
8-8. All right, so I am now officially in last place, I think, with you,
Lauren. Oh, yeah, welcome. Welcome. It's a fun place to be.
Cellar dwellers.
But you know what is the good part about being in last? You can only get better.
Yeah, rock bottom, nowhere to go but up.
Got a target on me? Is that
exactly
what ladies are saying?
All right, let's just go through these games real quick. Tampa versus Atlanta. Atlanta -7. Lauren, how do you see it?
I'm going Falcons. I think Matty Ice is going to keep improving.
I'm going to go Falcons, too. I just don't see any kind of offensive production out of Tampa.
Am I supposed to be writing everyone's picks down?
Oh, you're not the only supposed to be writing. Yes, you're also supposed to be giving us yours in a very smooth transitional voice.
Oh,
that's
gosh.
What T-Murph does.
Just please pick Tampa.
I've long said, by the way, I could not run the picks, so good luck with all of
them. So let's see. Me, Blythe, Lauren. I probably should have written this all down before this
segment started.
Maybe
we can do this after.
Started. Okay.
We'll consolidate.
You guys are both going ATL. I got to make up some ground somewhere, so... Even though I think the Falcons are going to win, especially coming off of a bad loss, give me Tampa just to be different. This is going to be why I go 3-13. All right, next game. San Diego and Buffalo. San Diego coming off a big win over Seattle. Buffalo starting the season 2-0. What?
I know ever since they put Lonnie Pryor on the practice squad, they have won both of their
secret weapons.
So, yeah, very secret. And so I'm going to actually end up going San Diego. I just think it's hard to stop Phillip Rivers.
That's my thing, too, is San Diego with Phillip Rivers. He has that cocky attitude. He loves taking other teams down, as we saw with Seattle last week. So give me San Diego.
All right. I will, once again, just to be different, give me Buffalo. And Blaylock is already 0-2 heading into
next week. Not necessarily.
You
get to be part of the Bills Mafia this week.
I do love that hashtag. All right, Dallas versus St. Louis. Dallas, who I lost complete faith in that first week, ends up bouncing back in week two, beating the Titans. They are a 2.5-point favorite at -2.5 against St. Louis.
That is correct. I hate Dallas, but I'm going to have to pick them. So Cowboys and Romo.
I'm going to pick Dallas again, too.
I'm either doing
I'm
well
a trend
or
here.
Not to both think this
But shit. I love to see Fisher lose. He's the head coach of the St. Louis Rams. So anytime I can pick against him, give me Dallas.
Yeah, I'll take Dallas too. I don't want to be totally different. Just a few. I think Dallas is going to pull that one out. All right, Washington versus Philadelphia. That's a pick 'em.
That one's going to be really interesting, obviously, for Jags fans based off of the fact that those
I know. Who do you want to lose in that matchup?
Who do I want to lose? Philadelphia. But who is going to lose is Washington.
Okay, so you're taking Philly.
Yeah, give me the Eagles and a pick 'em.
I'm taking Philly, too. I just think that offense is too much for Washington. It's one thing to play against the Jaguars' offense. It's a completely different other to play against Chip Kelly and his offense. So give me Philly.
You know what? based on the fact that Washington looked like a freaking Super Bowl contender this past week, and RG3 is not going to be back. Maybe Nick Foles is better than we gave him credit for. I'm thinking Philly. Yes, yeah, Kirk Cousins is better than we gave him credit for. So I'll take, you know what? I'll be different on this one. Give me Washington.
Yeah, there are a lot of coaches in the offseason that said that Nick Foles or that.
I know, I've got you screwed up too.
I know.
Kirk Cousins.
Cousins made the offense better.
Because I wanted him to be a Jaguar last season. So that's why I've always had a thing for Kirk Cousins.
All right. Houston versus the Giants. Houston is a 2.5-point favorite. How do you see that one playing out?
Yeah, I'd like to pick Tom Coughlin, especially in all of our discussions about the J Fund tonight, but the Giants are terrible, so I'm taking the Texans. Yet again.
I feel like you're copying my picks over here. I'm going to start hiding
mine
them.
Mine were done before noon today, as a matter of fact.
So, give me Houston, because I think that defense is way too much for Manning Face.
Yeah, I'll take Houston as well.
Did you call him Manning Face?
Manning Face? Oh, God. Wait, so great.
How wrong was I? I thought Eli was really going to have a bounce-back season. Has not really been that fabulous to start out this year.
No, but his Ole Miss Rebels are ranked 10 in the country.
Yeah, how about that? All right, Minnesota versus New Orleans. There's no way New Orleans is going to go 0-3 to start the season. Can I just go ahead and write down Saints for all of us?
I have the Saints.
I'm going to pick Minnesota.
Really?
I think finally AP is going to be back this week, as much as people want to disagree with that. But that Saints defense is awful. And with AP back, he's going to be wanting to prove something. Give me Minnesota.
Minnesota. Yeah, I've got the Saints.
Okay,
I picked them
me too.
To win the Super Bowl. That's looking not so good.
I'm still mad at myself because I had San Diego against Seattle, and I changed it. I would have been 4-12 instead of 3-13.
Baby steps.
The Jaguars
are it. Oh, gosh. All right, Tennessee versus Cincinnati.
Give me the Bengals, please. That's all I can say. Give me Andy Dalton.
Yeah, since he's just firing on all sides of the ball right now, give me Cincy. And I hate the Titans, so I'll never pick them.
Yeah, you did say that. Give me Cincy as well. All right, Baltimore-Cleveland.
This game is going to be tough. I thought the Ravens looked pretty good Thursday night, though, so I'm going with them. Give me the Ravens up in Cleveland.
I'm going to pick Cleveland on this one. I think they're starting to gel a little bit on that offense, and Menzel is keeping that bench warm with Hoyer playing the way he is, so give me Cleveland.
You know what? I might mix it up and go Cleveland on this one, too. I think that game is going to be a little bit closer. I mean, that's not that big of a spread, 1.5. But, yeah, we'll see how that plays out. All right, Green Bay. What's going on with Green Bay? They're taking on Detroit. How do you see that one?
This one's tricky because Detroit didn't play that well last
week. Yeah, this might be the toughest one.
Yeah, they kind of got blown out. I went back and forth on this one. This is actually the last game I picked, but I'm going with the Packers.
I'm going to go with the Packers, too. I just think that Aaron Rodgers, there's no way he's going to lose two games in a row. So give me Green Bay.
You know what? I'll take Detroit just to switch things up in a shocking victory over Green Bay. We'll save Indianapolis and Jacksonville for last. Oakland, New England. New England is a 15-point favorite.
Yikes. Oakland, I think, is the only team ranked below the Jaguars in the NFL power rankings this week. So I'm going to stick with that lovely 15-point Patriots.
I'm going to go New England, too, because I think if you gave Oakland 20 points, they still wouldn't be able to cover it.
What about 25?
25, maybe.
I don't know. The Jags were a 31-point loss to the Redskins.
Gosh. Oh, we'll just leave that week behind. All right. San Francisco, Arizona. I'll make it 3-for-3, by the way, on New England. San Francisco, Arizona.
I'm a huge Kaepernick fan. Give me the 49ers.
49ers too.
Yeah, they're coming off a loss, which I think makes them a little bit more potent. I'll take Arizona. I don't know. I'm just
trying to make a comeback.
Like such a rebel tonight. I don't know. I want to go nuts. Yeah, give me Arizona. All right, Denver, Seattle. Oh God, that's going to be a great game.
Yeah, that one I'm obviously the most excited about, in addition to the Jags and the Colts. I think that Peyton Manning has studied a lot of film in this offseason of that Seahawks defense, and I think he's the one quarterback that could probably get Richard Sherman to bite, so give me the Broncos.
I think Sherman was a little bit exposed last week by Philip Rivers, so I'm going to go with Denver as well.
Don't tell Sherman that. He did not take that well.
Shocking.
Sorry about it, but he lost.
All right, so you're going Denver?
I'm going Denver.
Yeah, I think that's a good pick. I'll make that 3-for-3 and go Denver as well. Kansas City, Miami. Kansas City almost pulled off that upset against Denver. Had it not been for a play by former Jaguar Terrence Knighton, I think Kansas City would have had a legit chance to score. How do you see that one?
I have to go Kansas City. The Dolphins are always a hit or miss team for me.
That's the thing. I never really know what the heck is going on with the Dolphins. So give me KC.
What do you think I'm going to take?
We think you're going to take Miami.
Just wrote it down. A couple games left. Pittsburgh, Carolina. Carolina is a 3.5-point favorite.
Yeah, with Cam Newton, there's no stopping the Panthers. Especially the Pittsburgh Steelers just don't look good. That good this season.
Steelers have looked awful.
Yeah.
Give me Carolina.
All right. I think
I love Cam Newton.
I think it's going to be 3-for-3. Frank Frangie is just, I think, crushed over how bad the Steelers have looked so far to start out this season.
It's going to be a river. We're Jaguar fans.
Yeah, it's going to be a rough season, too, for Pittsburgh. Chicago and the New York Jets, who figured out a way to blow it this past Sunday. The Jets are a 1.5-point favorite over Chicago. What say you?
This line really surprised me.
Surprises me too.
Yeah, I thought Chicago would have been a favorite, but I'm taking the Bears anyway.
I'm going to take the Bears too. I think the Jets have a lot. I mean, they had some things gelling last weekend, but when you have timeouts and coaches making embarrassing mistakes on the sidelines, you got to go with the better coaching staff. So give me Chicago.
Yeah, I think Chicago as well. I don't even know much about lines. I have to get people to explain it to me all the time, and I'm still surprised over this line.
Every home team should, in theory, get 3 points to start off with. So if it's any less
maybe
than 3 points,
maybe that's what it is then, because they're playing in New York.
That means it's a really close
game. All right, we'll wrap with Jacksonville versus the Indianapolis Colts. Ladies, that is a pick 'em.
I don't understand that.
I don't understand that either, but hey.
Favored by 14 points.
We'll take it at this point.
Yeah, and the reason I'm more upset about the fact that it's a pick 'em is because since I'm picking the Colts, it basically means that I don't think the Jags are going to win. Not that the Jags are going to cover the spread. There is no spread, so I just don't see the Jags pulling it together. But maybe when we take our West Coast road trip, Blythe.
No, our West Coast road trip is going to be even
exactly
worse.
Why it's funny.
I do this to myself because I'm a masochist, but I'm going to pick the Jaguars.
That a girl. I'm with you, Blythe. I'm sorry. I physically cannot get the words out to pick against Jacksonville. I can't pick against Jacksonville. And I promise you, even though I've been saying this for years now, that strategy is eventually going to pay off for me one day. Hasn't happened
day.
Yet. But one day, I promise
At
you,
least
picking Jacksonville
hope.
Every game is going to pay off. Oh, gosh. All right. Well, hopefully I do a little bit better than 3-13 because that was a brutal week for me with picks. But Blythe, you are the leader in the clubhouse. You're killing it right now. Demurf right behind you. Lauren and I are the bottom feeders, cellar dwellers, whatever you want to call us. We are bringing up the rear. All right, when we do return, we'll check in with Richard Miller. Miller on Sports is coming up next. You are listening to 1010XL 92.5 FM.